calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in those cheers and applause? No, there isn't. Hey, what's that sound? Time ticking. Yeah. Now, let's listen to the digital clock. So it's March already. Always a weird month. A month when time seems to accelerate. A cusp month, straddling winter and spring. Named after the Roman god of war. A month like no other because it is the only one that bridges two distinct states of being, or non-being, right? Death and rebirth. The yin to the March yang would be November, but it's not the same. By late autumn, most of the year and trees are already on life support. November 21st just slams the lid shut. And there's no mystery or guesswork about it. Winter is winter. You know what you're in for. And the idea is to hang on until it's over, right? But March is a joker, a wild card, unpredictable, and maybe a little bit dangerous. A time of crazy weather, crazy things, the March hare, March madness, St. Paddy's Day. St. Paddy's Day in New York was like a green-tinted circus. I wonder if it still is. Time does seem to speed up in March, and it got me thinking about the whole concept of time. It may be the single most elastic word in the entire language. Anyone from another land trying to grasp the near infinite usages and idioms of time would just go nuts, wouldn't they? If someone achieves a great honor or milestone, they'll say, "This is your time." But if that same guy gets hit by a cement truck the next day, they'll say, "It was his time." Unless he's younger, then they'll say, "He went before his time." We have good times, bad times, hard times, wild times, time out. People tell us to be on time, and then remind us if we're not by saying, "It's time." But we might answer, "I need more time." And hopefully they'll say, "You have time," or "Take your time." And not, "Time's up." A good comic has great timing. A shitty drummer or a broken clock cannot keep time. We better be ready when it's game time. And after the game, it's Miller time. Who's going to win next week's game? Well, time will tell. Why do we play games? To have a good time. Our culture is obsessed with time. From Roman sundials to the atomic clock, everybody needs to know exactly what time it is. Except those rabbits in Alice in Wonderland, they got a busted pocket watch which is running exactly 2 days slow. Some places are like that. New York runs 2 days fast, and L.A. runs 2 days slow. And in Chicago, you need to run faster than the bullets. At the mill or the factory, there's a time clock, which is redundant. If not a time clock, what the hell would it be? A space clock? Isn't that what Einstein postulated with his theory of relativity? And what's that time clock for? So management knows not only where you are, but when you are. So what do we crave? Time for ourselves, time on my own, a little extra time, an eighth day of the week, a 25th hour. If time isn't flying, it's dragging. You're either out of time or got time on your hands. The dumbest one of all is, "I'm killing time." Fuck no, amigo. Time's killing you, and me, and everybody. It's the one and only resource that is neither renewable nor sustainable.
Tomorrow is another day.
Yeah, another day to be subtracted from the 25,000 days in an average lifespan. 25,000 really isn't a lot of anything. Time can be a lever, a weapon, right? When somebody is jailed, they're doing time. If it's a long sentence or some federal hellhole like that Supermax one in Colorado, where you're locked up 23 hours a day, well, that's Hard Time. Maybe they should rechristen that one Hell Time. Sure, they take your freedom, but if it's not a life sentence, you can get that back, but that time they take from you, that's gone forever. Then there's the more general non-prison hard times, usually economic misery, as opposed to, hey, don't give me a hard time here. Kids are really good at giving parents a hard time. The very word time can somehow confer authority, right? Time Magazine, the New York Times, the Chicago Sun-Times. But it's nearly their time, isn't it? Newspapers and magazines are already dead. They're just too stupid or arrogant to lie down. And when they all fold, which they will people say, it was time's time. Episode 14 of this show is called The Time Bandits, about all the horrible people who spend their time wasting our time. Corporations with telephone hold times and government bureaucracies and customer service reps who are literally paid to waste your time so you'll give up and hang up and maybe not terminate your cell phone or cable contract. Imagine if we could sit in a room and see time, our time, encased in packing crates, and the crates would hold exactly the amount of time we spent doing one thing or another, and be clearly marked with a Sharpie, boxes saying school, work, sleep, sick, hangover, partying, friends, traffic, learning, achieving, television, porn, Facebook, Twitter, Grand Theft Auto, Call of Duty, Minecraft. How would all those boxes compare? What would be their proportions? When you looked at them, would they make you proud or fill you with regret? But it was a post on social media last week that got me thinking about time and time wasting from the other side. How many of us are our own time bandits? Answer, most of us. This guy, a married guy with twins on the way, recently purchased some high-end gaming rig, cost him a couple of grand. He inferred that he bought it as a sort of a hedge against encroaching what? Well, not old age, he was only in his late 20s, maybe against the heavy responsibility of impending fatherhood, doubled by twins. Well, I get that. In my 20s, probably nothing more signified the death of youth to me than the birth of a kid. I waited past my 20s, but never realized how having kids was actually a great hedge against mundane maturity. A kid gave me a full, unrestricted license to act like a toddler myself. Play with really stupid toys and ride around on a tricycle and so on. You're never too old to be immature, and kids enable that in a big, big way. But I wonder if that guy, just maybe, outgrew his taste for video games. Joe Rogan speaks about how he was as addicted to video games as one might be to heroin, and kicking the game habit wasn't easy, but sure as hell improved his life. I had a brief dalliance with video games. My very first computer came loaded with one, Marathon Durandal. Or maybe it was Durandal, I don't know. Nobody ever said it, but it had shit graphics. Nonetheless, it was really engaging. I would screw around with it for incrementally longer periods. First started off with maybe 15 minutes. Then I'll get back to work. Then a half an hour. Then an hour, but not a minute more. At the time, I was writing a book and was on deadline, so I really had little time to waste on nonsense. And one morning, I got brain freeze and thought, hell, I'll just boot up Marathon and blow a few ghouls to a bloody mist with that shotgun. And when I came out of my game trance, it was twilight. I had blown an entire fucking day on meaningless shit. Time wasted? Maybe 7 hours. Accomplishment? Zero. But that clock went right on ticking, But now I had one day less to make that deadline. I uninstalled Marathon. Never played it again. But it was fun. I don't hate video games. If I happen to be in an arcade and see one that grabs me, I might jack in a few quarters and play. But those games are brief. And the pause and demand for more money gives you a pretty easy exit. Unlike home versions. But we all blow large chunks of our lives, if not outright wasting time, at least in highly unproductive endeavors. All in, I've spent many, many months on skeet ranges. I enjoyed every minute of it, and I rationalized it by telling myself I'd be more than ready for the zombie apocalypse and the hunts for live game that would follow that apocalypse. But in retrospect, I could and should have curtailed my range time by at least a half, if not two-thirds. Blasting flying clay discs out of the sky is a hoot. But when you're done, there isn't a whole lot of satisfaction in standing back and looking at a pile of broken clay. If there's one thing most of us excel at, it's pissing away our own time doing idiotic shit, isn't it? At least, when we're active doing something, playing a sport, or an instrument, or building something, or painting the house, or even changing the oil on the car, we can stand back and feel some sense of accomplishment. Maybe we've gotten a good workout in the process, built some muscle mass, or maybe met some cool people. The military, which is pretty good at keeping people busy and focused, is real big on acronyms, aren't they? FUBAR and SNAFU, LCAC and BAR and SCUBA. Why? Mostly because they make it easier to remember stuff. I have an acronym I just invented that I'm going to make a part of my vocabulary and life. FWOT. FWOT. That's F-W-O-T, meaning fucking waste of time. After a drug habit, the most egregious wastes of time have got to be the electronic ones. Watching TV, FWOT. Mindlessly surfing the web, FWOT. Shit fights on social media, FWOT. And video games, FWOT. Who wastes the most time? Who has a better sense of the scarcity of time, men or women? I would have to say, hands down, chicks do. Not necessarily in the short term, like fucking around with hair and makeup and candlelit baths and color and aromatherapy and all that shit, but in the long term, like we don't have all that much time to decide if we're going to join forces and reproduce. But about 99% of the time, it's the female forcing that issue, no? 'Cause while he might have a Rolex, she's got a much more compelling timepiece, her biological clock. And it comes with a limited amount of time, after which that oven light goes out, never to be relit. Guys just don't think that way, but maybe we should. I get a lot of emails, so many that some I'm answering are very late, for which I apologize, and some I may overlook entirely. If I do, please don't be afraid to resend. But the overwhelming theme of them is the quest for companionship. When we're alone, we find it a lot easier to piss away our time, don't we? Nobody's pushing us to start a family and make more money to support that family, etc., etc. In episode 40, Beating Loneliness, we took a close look at being alone and offered some ways to increase your chances of finding someone with whom you can deeply bond and waste more time together. Since that episode, new data has surfaced, as well as new emails, so this is as good a time as any to share both with you. I was doing something I rarely do. Watching TV, yeah, that's what. And there was an author being interviewed. The guy was fascinating, and he was flogging his book entitled Lost Connections. uncovering the real causes of depression and the unexpected solutions. And this guy said something that validated a supposition I've had for a long time. I'll let him tell you.
If you're depressed and anxious, you're not crazy, you're not a machine with broken parts, you're a human being with unmet needs. So that can sound a bit strange in the abstract, so I'll give you a very obvious example that connects people immediately. There's a study that asks the average American, how many close friends do you have who you could call on in a crisis? And when they started doing it years ago, the most common answer was 5. Today, the most common answer is none. So none. It's the most, not the average, it's the most common answer. So we've become the loneliest society there's ever been.
Why would that be? We've never been more connected digitally and disconnected emotionally. Most of us use our phones for text messaging way more than voice, don't we? Is it more efficient? Sure. And more impersonal. Who could have imagined that human interaction, and ultimately friendship, would be a casualty of the digital age? Texts and emails have no tone, they have no color, no warmth, and no soul. Texting is communication, but it sure as hell isn't connecting. And so I see more and more letters, like the one I'm about to relate to you. It's from a guy who shall remain anonymous. He's in his early 30s and lives in the USA in a place where it gets cold. That should narrow it down to 30 or 40 million dudes. I'm not reading his email in its entirety because I don't want to relay any personal info about him. So I have edited it a bit. He says, "Hey Larry, I just got let go from my job. This has been the third job I either had to quit or got fired from in the last 3 years. So I'm missing something big here that is not allowing me to have stable employment, and I can't figure out why or how to deal with the situation. My parents had children rather later than most, so I was quickly taught old-fashioned manners. Talk only when spoken to. Say yes, ma'am, yes, sir. So I don't talk unless I have to, and I keep my words few and far between. So, some may see me as aloof, a snob, or even a creep, since I don't talk about every thought that crosses my mind. I keep coming across a certain type of woman. One might call them bitches or other slurs. They seem to go out of their way to get me fired or have me quit. They are extremely bitter, angry women. They have an attitude that they are better than everyone around them, and you need to cater to them. They think the most minor inconvenience is a major crisis and want you to react in kind. They talk nonstop about nothing. My interactions with them are cold right off the get-go. My punctuality at work and my discipline annoy them. They tend to complain about something minor, then they go into a loop, like winding each other up to a tizzy. I don't play that game. I focus on my job. I keep quiet and don't get involved. As time goes by, they try harder and harder to get a negative reaction out of me. Since they are using techniques for high school girls, that has no effect. I don't tell them anything about my life. It's none of their business. And if I did, they would try to use it against me. This wears on my soul. They have no problem lying about a situation or sabotaging work altogether. This was my downfall from my current position. When there are no groups of these women, I excel in my job. Other women who are my supervisors and my peers get along fine with me and even seek my help. These situations bring me to tears of rage. I just want a job where I can punch in and out, get an honest day's pay. I can't really look for construction or outdoor work since I have a respiratory illness. I'm single and really want to have stable employment to get myself out of debt and have some sort of normal life. I need help on how to deal with these kinds of people. Signed, Anonymous. Well, Anonymous, your situation is not unique, and you have run afoul of a clique of women who, unfortunately, are also far from unique. An author named Rosalind Wiseman profiled such creatures in her book entitled Queen Bees and Wannabes, Helping Your Daughter Survive clicks. The book was a huge hit and was the basis for a big movie entitled Mean Girls. That book came out in 2002. Were it written today, it would likely never be published because, in our new cultural zeitgeist, all women are perfect. And all the world's problems come from men. It's just that simple. I've worked with bitches of either sex. We never use the word gender in here. They are horrible, deceitful people who try to undermine you and make your working days a literal hell. And when they get together in groups and work as a team toward your destruction, well, you know the outcome. People of both sexes can be cruel, vicious assholes, but now women are to be believed no matter what, and men are assumed guilty until they are destroyed. No trial necessary. By the way, I have two daughters, and I have seen clicks of bitchy girls up close and personal, and the damage they can do to those in their sights. It's not fiction. It happens. Your health issues really put you at a disadvantage here. Otherwise, I would urge you to work in fields where guys are still a majority. Barring that, you're going to have to examine why these nasty creatures are targeting you, and my guess is for two reasons. One, you are a man of few words, which is cool for Clint Eastwood heroes, but in office workplaces, people just love to gab and gossip and kibitz, and when you don't participate, and I sure as hell don't blame you for not wanting to, but when you remain silent, they are thinking you're a snob or a creep. Compounding this, it sounds like you perform your job better and more conscientiously than they, and that's another reason you're drawing their fire. So here's my prescription for you, my friend. You need to develop a line of bullshit. Small talk and chit-chat and phony compliments. And partly because of your upbringing and the way you're wired, you have not done that. Most workplaces, especially offices, are phony places. Artificial assemblies of people who might not choose to hang around one another. So the social lubricant is acting and bullshitting, feigning interest in their new phone or their kids or their European vacation. You need to be fake, at least while you're at work. And that won't be easy because you sound like a very honest guy. I would urge you to do one of two things. If you have the bread, take a Dale Carnegie course. They specialize in helping guys like you learn to sling bullshit and nonsense that keeps nasty morons at bay. Yeah, he's the win friends and influence people guy. I've known a couple of dudes that took the course and their transformations were magical. I've no idea the cost. If it's too pricey, I want you to Google and locate your local chapter of Toastmasters International. If they're not free, a membership is pretty cheap, and they specialize in public speaking. Also a good way to help you hone a line of snappy patter. Then when you score your next gig, you'll be able to say just enough to satisfy the piranhas and make them turn their fangs on some other guy, or even better, themselves. The secret is, you really don't have to say anything when you talk. Just make enough noise so they think you have. And they're usually not listening anyway. Good luck. Give it a shot and let me know how it works out. Nasty people and cliques can really fuck up a school or a workplace and turn it into a living hell. Most of my jobs have had plenty of women, and I rarely have any problems. I've also had a number of female bosses. Most of them were pretty good too, but one was a huge asshole. And you can hear all about her in episode 4, Larry Fires His Boss. Go to thatlarryshow.com and click the link for January 2017 and have a good long look at the episode's artwork. I know you'll dig it. Hey everyone, thanks for hanging with me once again here at the Take No Shit Dojo. It's always great to visit with you. Come back this Sunday for the fifth, that's right, five, edition of our new spin-off show, Sinner's Sunday. What is it? Well, it's the longest-running Saturday night after-party you ever heard, where the barbecue is hot, the beer is cold, and the chicks are pointy. We tackle the really big spiritual questions like, did Jesus curse? And was he a party animal? This week, I'll reveal JC's secret nickname. Don't miss it. Now, if you like what you just heard, if you got something out of it, why not join the dojo and help us keep the lights on here? You're listening to other podcasts. Do any of them do for you what this one does? Just go to thatlarryshow.com, click the Patreon button, and you'll find yourself in a world of bonus content and special rewards. If you download from iTunes, linger there a moment and throw the show a 5-star review. It really helps things grow. I'll see you and the rest of the crew this weekend at Sinner's Sunday. And until that time, take no shit. Thank you.